Welcome to another Michigan Writers Series, this evening featuring Patrick Russell LeBeau, Associate Professor of American Thought and Language here at MSU and Director of American Indian Studies Program here. He has recently had published by the Michigan State University Press, recently being 1999, a first book of poetry, Stands Alone, Faces, and Other Poems, which I have had the pleasure of reading, and they're interesting, thoughtful poems, and the book itself is really in three parts. The first one is Stands Alone, which has a section of range of poems, really, but it's a section on a hunter and a veteran and an old man and a bootlegger. And what I'd like to ask you is, what are these? Are these ceremonial poems or stages of man, or can you?
I think they're both. They're both. There's a lot of ceremony in the poems that I tried to put in, or ritual.
Certainly starts off that way.
Prayer, ritual, self-reflection. Mm-hmm. Sometimes ceremony and ritual is done for healing. Mm-hmm. And then stages of man, and that can be seen in many different ways, like stages of moving through life, so being young and then growing older and then being very old and then dying. And also sort of the stages that bring you either to happiness or sorrow, or steps that take you to tragedy or triumph. And then reflecting on all of these stages in your own life, or the habits or daily routines and rituals that you engage in on a daily basis, versus the ceremonial rituals of prayer and religious observance,
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. observing your place in the greater universe or creation.
Some of them, I mean, they're all very stately. Particularly the bootlegger, I think, an old man, are not pretty poems. Where are you going with that? Is it just your honesty, your description is very raw sometimes?
Well, yeah, some people see them a little dark, but I see them as dramatic, maybe at times melodramatic, but I always they're sort of pronoun-driven poems, and I like the rhythm of the poems,
mm-hmm.
but the starkness of them can be are just parts of stages that Native Americans have found themselves in transitional periods,
mm-hmm.
between, let's say, independence and self-sufficiency to dependence and perhaps not able to be self-sufficient in the mm-hmm. same ways that they remembered or stories were told to them. And then these are deep rifts in the development or the staging of a person's life through these really dramatic transitional periods.
Does that go for the social fabric as well?
Yeah, I think that in terms of the social fabric, the complete story includes the underbelly or the darker side.
Yes.
And I like you. A lot of people say honesty about it. I think that pleases me, because it shows that I was on the right track in terms of trying to show not just a romantic...
Which so often is the case.
Especially with Native American poems, or poems by Native Americans and poems written about Native Americans.
Pocahontas and all of that.
They can be very, they can be overly romantic. And mm-hmm. I like Longfellow. And I like what a wonderful rhythmic poems. And, but it doesn't show, I don't think, the psychology and inner loneliness. And I think one of the part of this is that Native Americans are fragmented from communities, and they're community-oriented people. Mm-hmm. And so it's very stark when you individualize the Native in mm-hmm. this in modern world. And so this pronoun, this he or whatever, it could mm-hmm. be a she, I suppose, is fragmented out of community and family, and is kind of searching back, trying to get back mm-hmm. to community and family.
Mm-hmm. Another face on that, to use the word, faces, your middle part of the book is an essay, really, not a poem, unless do you regard it as a prose poem?
It started out as a poem. It was a poem at one point. That then each line of the original poem was expanded upon into paragraphs, and I see it as a story. But it's a story that could be an allegory
or a parable. A parable. What I saw.
Well, more like a parable.
Is this really something that was told to you by your ancestor?
Many stories have quite a bit of truth to them, mm-hmm. but then they're, like it says in the story, mm-hmm. they're changed by the...
But you give it such a feeling of reality and allegory or parable at the same time. And you keep coming back and saying, well, this is what was told to me. Now, I could have embellished it a little bit.
I think we change stories to fit the audience. I'm not a oral storyteller, and sometimes I invite a Native person who's adept at telling mm-hmm. stories. Because they tell them in many different ways to many different people, and they never sound the same. Mm-hmm. Where I'm more literal, I have to have my written words down in front of me, and so they kind of stay the same as I read them, even though maybe I read them different ways. But that's the only way they change. But storytellers often will change the story. So in this particular story, I wanted to try to underline that the sequences could change, or maybe it's put together between several sessions with one person over mm-hmm. many years, mm-hmm. and it sounds like as if it all happened in one day or one period or one time. And also, you look towards your audience, and so some elements in there are going to be changed to fit that audience, and that usually means some clarifications of terms or situations.
Well, it was a beautiful statement of the dual nature of the Native American, or not the dual nature, but the life in the modern world and looking back at the old or the roots.
Also the dual citizenship of Native peoples as well.
Yes.
So we belong to tribal cultures mm-hmm. and tribal entities that are governments as well, and also are U.S. citizens mm-hmm. and voting in the presidential elections coming up, doing that as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that creates quite a bit of confusion for outsiders to Native peoples' lives and outlooks, and also for Natives themselves. They sometimes get confused about what is right, what is wrong, is this going to hurt the tribe, or if I do this with the tribe, is that going to affect my life outside?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, and I think it's, I saw it mentioned somewhere about your academic life, your PhD, your professorship here. How has that affected your identity?
This is one thing that baffles people. You know, natives can be lawyers, they can be doctors, and I don't want to go to the cliche, you know, but my sister's a medical doctor. She works pretty close to reservations in Oklahoma for Indian Health Service. And we can have this and have that too. And so the question, you want to say, well, you know, like anybody who comes from a tradition where not many people were educated in this century, you know, since, let's say, my parents were born in the 20s, and very few people ever went to college, made it to college, very few people ever even graduated high school. I'm sure this is true with people from Appalachia or other places in the United States. You feel triumphant about that, you know, as well as, you know, sometimes people think you've left the community.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to do as much as we can for the community within our new positions. And we try to encourage other Native peoples to honor education.
As they honor knowledge.
As they honor any kind of knowledge. And you can do both. I mean, it's about change and persistence. We drive cars to go to ceremonies. We go to Kmart or Myers to get the tarps and the ropes and the twine instead of animal hides and things like that. So, I mean, that's change as well. I mean, we're not doing things exactly the same way as they did them in the past. We can't. We don't. We use stick matches. I mean, some people don't want to use lighters. You know, the kind of lighters to start ceremonial fires, but they'll use stick matches. But even that is, in a sense, an innovation, a change, because they didn't use those things before. So it's a matter of perspective, and people can misconstrue that. And I didn't want to answer it. I could have answered it many different ways.
Yeah. Your parents were born in North Dakota and South Dakota, and you were born in South Carolina, and you fetched up fairly early here in Michigan. This is the Michigan Writers Series. Do you identify as Michigan, or do you use Michigan for inspiration as well as your Native American background?
I'm certainly feel like I'm a Michigan or Michigander. I've been in Michigan since I was in high school, so ninth grade, I think, which was
a
high
long
school
time.
For me. So I went to Kellogg Community College. I went to Michigan State University. I went to the University of Michigan. So maybe
I guess you're a card-carrying Michigander.
I mean, there's no doubt that Michigan, and plus the woodland Native peoples. You know, my mom is Plains Ojibwa or Plains Chippewa, but I hung around mostly with my mom's side of the family rather than than my dad's, who were Lakota, Plains Lakota.
Mm-hmm.
We did visit our Lakota relatives, but I mean, I think mostly I more associate myself with woodland Native peoples, especially Michigan Native peoples. So the rituals or the sweat lodge that I go to is actually a woodland Indian sweat lodge or Chippewa sweat lodge, not the Lakota. So I feel very much at home in Michigan.
Good. What other Native American writers do you read and admire?
I like N. Scott Mamede, Louise Erdrich, Gerald Visner, especially Gerald Visner. He's just an incredible writer, often very difficult to read, but fascinating when you try to unravel the way that he puts together words and sentences and paragraphs, and then sometimes the stories can be very bizarre and go in different places, and he mixes up, but he starts writing an essay and then it turns into a short story, or He defies convention, you know. Mm-hmm. He experiments too, and mm-hmm. I heard him say that he tries to write a haiku in every sentence, and you know, just the thought, just to even think that you could possibly do that and sustain it for 500 pages or something just seems like an incredible
awesome.
Statement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Tell us about something. Tell us about what you're working on now. Or can you tell us something about that?
Right now I'm working on a curriculum unit on Michigan Indians. It's called Michigan Indians Yesterday and Today, and it provides lesson plans and resources in a narrative description to 8th grade to 12th grade teachers.
Oh.
And to teach them about Native peoples of Michigan. And it tries to teach four basic concepts, Constitution and treaties and how they're related, how stereotypes influence thinking, how the great man theory of history shifts our focus to Indian warriors like Pontiac and Tecumseh and, mm-hmm. and ignores families and communities,
mm-hmm.
And then how historical maps of Michigan are more about the treaty-making process, more about Michigan history than Native American history, and then I move into showing how Natives map and how you can map creatively, like students could map their mornings or they can use stories to tell maps, and how Natives will story a land, you know, by telling the stories of like the Great Dunes or mm-hmm. the Sleeping Bear Dunes mm-hmm. or how Mackinac Island came about, and some of these things are being used by other writers, you know, in one sense, but I mean mm-hmm. they can also be imaginatively used by students, and that's one project I'm working on.
Oh, that's great.
Now, another essay that I finished, it's going to be in a book, is on the Mishigamwa tribe of terrible Indians down at the University of Michigan, who are a senior society who dress up like Indians since 1902.
Really?
And they have a special room in the Tower of the Union down there, the Michigan Union. They've mm-hmm. since been removed from that tower through the 25-year effort of students, former Michigan Indian students, University of Michigan mm-hmm. Indian students, who have been protesting and trying to get them out of there because of ridicule of culture
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Stereotypical representation and you know, that whole bag. And another book I have in mind is to take that essay and expand it. And also include other writers, including the Mishigamwa, to write essays. The Students of Color Coalition, who occupied the union this past last year, write an essay. I think I have a professor Novert that would mm-hmm. do all of the famous sports heroes that were former Mishigamwas, like President Ford and others. And this book is another one that is in development and probably will be starting to work on that hopefully in the winter.
Well, that'll be something to look forward to. Well, I want to thank you. It's already pretty close to the time when your reading begins. I think we'd better call it quits here.
Okay.
It's been very interesting speaking to you, Patrick LeBeau, and I look forward to hearing your reading.
Thank you.
Thank you.